Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am your co-host, Jason Snell. And with me, as always, the host of the show, the Hollywood Reporter's very own, Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason.
Big week.
It's a very big
week. Huge week. You know why it's a big week?
Because we're doing yet another podcast.
Yes, that's it. Every week that we do this podcast is a big week.
Big week. Historic.
It is. Mm-hmm. People will remember this week until next week.
Absolutely. 13, and then they will say, those guys are hecka consistent.
Lucky 13. Did you survive the hellestorm?
I did survive the hellestorm. My biggest worry in the hellestorm in the Bay Area was there were news projections that we were going to lose power and maybe by 8 o'clock. And that day, Thursday, was Golden Globe Award nomination. So I was like, well, okay. I didn't want to get up super early, but if I don't get up super early, then I might lose power. So I need to get up, get the results, and get that analysis piece going. So that's what I did.
You know, Golden Globe week, that's a big week too. That's a huge week because these are the most, I can't even pretend. I was going to say these are the most important awards ever in the history of, no, they're not. They're interesting in that they're movie and TV awards. And I think
people
pay attention to the movie part because it's before the Oscars. But there's also the whole TV part that happens way after the Emmys. And they're always very interesting choices. They're fascinating because they seem so random sometimes. So should we go through some of the nominees and sort of get your take? I know you wrote a piece about it for The Hollywood Reporter. And
I did indeed. And yes, and I was preface this discussion by saying, you know, it really is something when, look, we joke about people watching too many, there being too many awards, which is, that's true. And people will watch, you know, almost anything. But it does say something that, you know, that no one else can really, outside of the Emmys, which is, you know, that's the standard bearer, and that's kind of a shame in itself. But nothing else has been able to come along to really have, like, a pretty big impact on television. The SAG Awards are a joke. And everything else is kind of a joke. I would say the best award show outside of the Emmys is our very own Television Critics Association Press Awards. Yes, those are the ones, man. Those are the unseen unfilmed, unheard awards.
Yes. Off the record, practically.
Off the record, basically, yes. And we're just pretty much off the record. No, I'm just kidding. The TCA Awards actually are really good awards because they, you know.
It makes sense because they're
make
TV
sense.
Critics. Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, there actually are parts that don't make sense. We're guilty of that as
All
well.
Right.
But here's the thing that kind of gets me about the Globes. The Globes, they serve a purpose now in that they, and I wrote a little bit about this in my piece, is that their role almost, and they're embracing it, when they do a good job is when they offset the snubs, or not even snubs so much as just the Emmy voters being clueless or slow to embrace new series, whereas the
inertia,
Globes jump
right?
on it. Yeah, once, just total inertia.
Once you get nominated for an Emmy, you basically got like a ticket to be nominated for an Emmy forever.
Oh my God, Modern Family. Wow, yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So yeah, I love when the Golden Globes, did they nominate Orphan Black last year? Is that right?
They did. That's a good question. They did nominate Tatiana Maslany. And then
That's right. But at least that was a sign of like, hey, that's a show that nobody had even heard of that's good. And
right.
They got a nomination. It's like, well, that's a good thing about the Golden Globes is that some of their out of left field stuff is really great.
Yeah. And then the downside to that is that because they tend to smell out the new stuff quicker than anybody else. But there's no loyalty to it. Like
right.
they for last so Tatiana Maslany is a good example. Like how it just she should always be in every nomination. Every entity that nominates stuff for television should have her in it. It's just a slam dunk.
Right.
But that you know last year they had Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Kind of out of the blue nomination for not only for best series, but Andy Samberg was in there for best actor. And this year, neither of them are in there.
Yeah, which is baffling because that show's not any worse than it was, but it's not in there.
So it's like if you're going to get out in front, then stay loyal, especially if the shows and
but
both
doesn't that turn black. Them doesn't that turn them into the Emmys then though if they stay loyal?
Yes, right.
Oh.
So but then they stay loyal other ways too. Like you can't win, right? I mean, Downton Abbey again. Really? Seriously? For best series? I don't know. I don't know. So that's a tough one. But we can go through the series and let's see what they did right and then what they did wrong.
Let's do it. Best drama series. The Affair, which I haven't seen, but you are really hot onto The Affair, right? On Showtime.
Well, I was at the beginning.
Oh, and, yeah. You've yeah. cooled now.
Mm-hmm.
You've I've soured.
Substantially.
The Affair, and... perhaps it's time to end The Affair, Tim.
You're at your very core, Jason. You there's a headline writer in there who would love to have those, right?
That's a great title.
time to end The Affair. Yeah, you're just drooling over that.
Yes, I've been waiting to spring that one for a while now, but it's there.
You know,
how many episodes has The Affair even aired?
Right, like right now, I think they've aired. I think they've done eight. I think they're going to be at number nine on Sunday.
And the Golden Globe voters really like those first four episodes of The Affair, I guess.
Yeah, you know what? Here's the thing about the Affair. They didn't send out, I think, more than two advanced ones. And I put that in my review. I was like, look, who knows? I mean, this is normally you get a lot more of these from Showtime and from cable in general. And I put a gigantic asterisk in my review. And asterisk in my review. And... you know, it really came to fruition. I liked the show at the beginning. I was super excited about it. And then it's gone downhill since. And it's gotten to the point where I'm not hate watching it yet, but I'm about to do a piece, a little takedown piece on The Affair. So when I look at this, I'm like, okay, so this year the Golden Globes nominate The Affair, which basically category for category replaced last year's Masters of Sex nomination from Showtime. So they basically swapped those two out. But The Affair does not deserve to be there. And what I pointed out in my review was you can't go in for The Affair, which is a series that has gone down the drain, I think, and then go old school with Downton Abbey. Because then you have call into question, like, should The Good Wife have been nominated? I mean, not The Good Wife, I'm sorry. Should House of Cards been nominated? Because that, you know, without the other two, without The Affair and Downton Abbey, then you can make, I would say, bolder choices. Because I think The Good Wife has to be on there. House of Cards, I think, is kind of on the fence. But to me, the big oversight, there's two glaring omissions here. One is you can't snub, and for the Gold Globes, this is the second time in a row, you can't snub Mad Men. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that's crazy. And then you can't snub The Americans on FX.
Right.
So those two are the huge oversights in this category.
Right. Downton Abbey back in it again. Okay.
Right. Good. So I don't think that should have been there. Of the five that are there now.
Is that the first that off the list?
There. Yes. Because I'll give them that the early part of The Affair was intriguing. Mm. And since it's in their DNA to jump on shows early, I get why they did that. But in this instance, they've made a dreadful mistake.
Right, because Downton Abbey is not... Yeah, so The Affair, they jumped on early, and it turns out not so great. Downton Abbey is coming from the other direction, which is it's like just the old standby.
That's an Emmy nomination right there. That's what that is.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, and is House of Cards that, too?
Well, you know, it's so weird for me. I like House of Cards, but it's so weird for me because when you burn through these episodes of that show because it's a Netflix series so quickly that I'm like, wow, House of Cards has only been around for two seasons. It seems like it's been forever.
Yeah.
You know, so it's almost like you do forget about it. So in some ways, I'm on the fence about whether that, because it is a good series. Is it a top five series? Well, I'm not if you're going to exclude Mad Men and The Americans. No, it's not. So...
And then you got the Good Wife, which I've heard, you know, I don't watch that show, but I've heard that it has maintained a pretty good level of quality. So it's not, it doesn't sound like an outrageous choice.
No, it is a good choice. The Good Wife, that's, you know, look, you're talking to the wrong guy because I know so many other people really love that. It's their favorite show on broadcast television.
Me too.
But it's not my favorite show on broadcast.
I'm with you.
So I'm having trouble with it.
But I get it. I hear from people all the time who say that it's really great and that it's like a prestige kind of drama, that it's the drama that broadcast TV can be proud of. And okay, I'm kind of willing to take that at face value, but yeah.
Yeah, and then you watch it and you think, okay, this is good.
Yeah.
It's not great. It's good.
Hmm.
It's The Good Wife.
Yeah, it's not The Great Wife.
It's not The Great Wife. That's what I always say. It's not The Great Wife. If it was The Great Wife, I would have had it on my list.
Point well taken. It's not the Golden Globe Wife.
No, it's not.
House of Cards, I've said this before, but just to bring it up again, I sometimes wonder if the Netflix approach, and now the Amazon approach too, of dropping every episode at once of a season isn't a mistake. I know that it's become a thing to like, oh, we can binge watch it and all that. But not only do you get that sort of like, you binge watch it and then it's over, and then you've got a year where you can barely even remember. It's like, oh yeah, I watched that really fast. But I feel like you lose all of the like ongoing social media dynamic of, oh my God, could you believe what happened in this episode? That's all gone because everybody's out of sync because they all got dropped at once. And so they're just like, if it works for them, that's great. But I keep wondering why they don't release them in smaller chunks, even if it wasn't one episode a week, which I know Yahoo's going to do that with Community, right? They're going to release them one a week like it was on TV. I kind of like the idea of doing that. But at the very least, if you dropped, six episodes here and six episodes there, I don't know. I love how crazy it is to drop a whole season of a show in, at once. But I'm not sure it's good for anybody.
Yeah, I think it detracts from, like you say, the water cooler, the zeitgeisty element of television shows. Totally, that detracts from that. And I lose track of trying to keep it. I can't put those shows. It's really hard to put those shows in the power rankings when they're up and running.
Right.
And then it's just you come at the end of this, season. You're like, oh, right. Yeah. Like, if you don't talk about something for an extended amount of time, you're really kind of robbing the PR elements of the show. And you're robbing people who are fans of sort of the deliciousness of talking about it from week to week. And
that's one of the great things about talking about TV shows that isn't true of movies or books, is that you can talk in the middle of the story about, oh, what do you think is going to happen next? And, oh, can you believe that just happened? And if you just, everybody's just binge watching these shows, you lose it because nobody knows where anybody is. So I know they're like, major developments in, for example, House of Cards season 2 that I'm aware of because of spoilers. But that would have been a talking point at some point that week that it aired, right? Everybody like, wow, I can't believe that happened. No, it's just all part of the mass of of House of Cards.
Yeah, stuff. You have to wonder if the dropping it all like for binge viewing offsets, your promotional stuff, and then also not just the promotional stuff. That's because that's a business decision, but whether it hurts the viewer. I mean, I guess you'd have to take a poll. Like, would you rather have something you can binge watch, or would you rather have something you can talk about endlessly? And you're all on the same page.
I'm also not sure that binge watching is the best way to showcase your new drama. I mean, do you really want to watch that in a couple of sittings, or would you rather people kind of watch it, at their own pace? Even if it was one a day, would that be a better pace than 12 hours in one sitting? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Game of Thrones got nominated. I was happy to see that in this category. That's an example, I think, where the Hollywood Foreign Press Association does have sometimes they have the genre shows a little more on their radar than the Emmys do. So it was good to see that in there. And, that's a super – that really is like, what, the most successful HBO show ever at this point. So
yeah, it's you have to have that on there. I agree completely on that. Though I do want to get into like the genre element about like – because I'm also preparing my top 10 list. Mm-hmm. Well, not top 10. In my case, more like top 30 probably of all the shows on TV. And, I'm not saying it deserves to be in the top 5 list, but, you brought up the fact that they are the ones who pay attention more to genre shows. And I just think like as I was doing this, my list for the year end, I was like, boy, The Walking Dead really does get snubbed. I mean, it really does.
Yeah,
like,
that's
no,
true.
No awards, not even, nothing. Well, they get makeup awards or something like that, but they, none of the actors, none of the writers. It's kind of a shame.
That's pretty much the most successful show on TV right now.
Right now, absolutely.
So, anything more about the dramas before we move on?
Well, I mean, you got a huge snub with Mad Men. I don't know.
What's your five? Do you have five that you would put in here? Not necessarily your five favorite shows, but the five that you would be like, this is a nice collection of.
Sure, I think if you come into it and you sort of respect that it's their list and not my list, I would say, okay, well, look, if you're going to go new with The Affair, which I think is a mistake, then you can't go super old with Downton Abbey, because that just, you know, you have to have Game of Thrones, and you have to have The Good Wife.
Mm-hmm.
So then that puts House of Cards in play as something that shouldn't be on there, and I think that's debatable. But I just think that if you're representing television, you can't miss like the two best series that are on television that are actual series. You know, you and I have talked many times about like miniseries and short form programming, all this nonsense. And look, we had two or three of the greatest ones we've seen in like you know 5 to 10 years were nominated this year. And so there's a place for that, and there always will be. But like, if for ongoing series, it's a little bit of a, you know, it's harder to maintain your greatness year after year. And so in some ways, you're kind of having a better achievement. You're kind of pulling off a kind of an audacious creative achievement there. So I just think the two that are actually doing that are continuing year to year series, in Mad Men especially, and The Americans, you got to have those on the list. So those are my complaints. I can pull two out easily. I know that people will say, okay, well, what would you take out? Well, I would take out The Affair and Downton Abbey. But if you want, you know, given that it's the Globes and like new stuff, then if you put in The Affair, then you take out Downton Abbey and you take out House of Cards.
Hmm.
End of story.
It would be a better list. We keep Game of Thrones and Good Wife on there. We put The Americans and Mad Men on there, and maybe toss in Walking Dead.
See, now you're talking. See? Now we're talking. Absolutely.
We fixed it.
We fixed it.
We for the TVTM Awards.
Let's just do a podcast called We Fixed It. And we just sure. come back and we revisit.
We have all the answers
mm-hmm.
for everything.
2020 hindsight.
Mm-hmm. Okay, comedy series. I think that these are interesting. And so, we always get to ask the question, is that a comedy?
Well, that's true. Okay, mm-hmm. in two instances on this list, so you're nominated, the ones that they picked were Girls, Jane the Virgin, Orange is the New Black, Silicon Valley, and Transparent. I think if you were going to make a, if you were really going to go and say, what's the true comedy on there, Silicon Valley is the only clear, straight up comedy. Everything else is basically a dramedy.
I guess so. I mean, you could Girls, just because it's a half hour, I mean, it's more of a comedy than not, but it's...
Oh,
it's,
don't get sucked in by the time constraints,
but
though.
I know, it's true. It's not best half hour show, right?
Right.
That's not it. It's just, you're right. Silicon Valley is the one that is that entirely for the laughs.
And I think that Girls, you know, I give... Part of the reason I like Girls is that I give it credit for... not just being like joke.
Oh, true.
That they take on some very serious,
absolutely true
things, and it is, you know, it's got a layer of emotionalism in it that Silicon Valley doesn't have, you know, or 30 Rock never had, sure. That kind of thing. You never laid that kind of emotionalism onto the top of, yeah. of those sitcoms. But I actually don't have a problem with anybody in this category as far as. It's hard. This is one where I look at it and I'm like, okay, that's hard to do, because Orange is the New Black is a dramedy. It has very funny moments to it. It was available to be nominated last year, and the Globes snubbed it.
Mm.
And I think this is a precursor that, like, it's easier to win in a comedy category, you know, because the competition in dramas during our Renaissance era is very, very difficult. Especially if you're going to stick to only five.
Unless you don't nominate Mad Men and The Americans. But
right.
Yeah, anyway.
That's kind of how they got around that, right? It's like, we'll just ignore them. But yeah, I mean, obviously I would like to see Louis there. And last year they didn't have, you know, last year they nominated Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which,
yeah.
You know, it's really only gotten better.
Yep.
So how can you have it go in there and then not even be nominated this year? But I think those are the two clear snubs to me. I think is Louis, which was a fantastic and troubling season, but good, and then Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Right.
But is there something there that you, on these five, that you wouldn't go with?
You know, I haven't seen all of them, but I've heard good things, and they seem perfectly reasonable. And again, we've talked about Jane the Virgin a lot here. This more ammunition in, yes, Jane the Virgin is a good show, to our listeners who are like, what? Huh?
Right, yeah, what? Yeah, exactly.
Although, again, not entirely a comedy, but definitely comedic. It's a dramedy. Silicon Valley, I have some issues with it because I feel like it missed entirely satirizing the sexism that's in the tech industry. And in fact, you know, like there are two women in the whole first season, and right. and one of them is an assistant and one of them is a hooker. And I think there might have been a third later on, but who was also a cipher. I mean, literally, there are right. no women in that show. And I felt like they weren't trying to satirize. Like, one of the women, in, there should have been a woman in the cast. And then yeah, they should have satirized the fact that the women are treated badly and are outsiders. Of like, all the things to satirize in Silicon Valley about like about tech culture, they missed the boat there. And I hope that in their second season, they address that. That said, that show made me laugh more than just about any show, made me laugh harder than just about any show on TV, because it was, when it was funny, it was really funny. And you know, I think Mike Judge doesn't get enough credit. That guy is that guy has made a lot of really amazing, funny, strange television and movies. So you know, it worked for me when I didn't expect it to, despite the problems that I have with it. So I'm happy to see it recognized here, because it has that from left field Golden Globes kind of feel about it. Like they're championing the show that people may not be paying attention to, even though it's on HBO, that they might not, they'd be like, yeah, whatever. And the Golden Globes get to shine their light on it a little bit. I think that's good.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that you said. And I do believe that they have, they are going to address the lack of a female presence on that show.
Good.
In season two, which they should, right?
I think I saw that they hired at least one woman as a another woman to the writing staff or something like that. I've been encouraged that maybe they're gonna do it this time, because I mean, we've seen so many stories about the way that the tech industry doesn't treat women well. And this is a satire of Silicon Valley. It is perfect fodder for them. So
yeah,
I'd love
and
to
I,
see
I think Mike Judge and those guys are looking at that like, you know what, you know, they're right. I don't think that they're feeling. I think that they're feel. I don't think that they felt like they got hand slapped. I think they felt like, you know what, this is legitimate.
Right. Good.
It's a legitimate criticism, and we on the other, you know, for them thinking about them, I think they said, you know, we should do this because it's so much material mm-hmm. that we're missing out on.
Yeah.
So they should definitely do that, and I think that'll be good.
But it's good. And
yeah, and transparent. You know, look, if you look at this list, I mean, it's pretty good. You got. If you just look at that girl, you got HBO.
It's your top two shows of the fall are on this list, right?
Yes, exactly. And it's kind of with Jane the Virgin and Transparent. And yeah. If you're and look at how you're spread over. You've got girls on HBO, Jane the Virgin on the CW. You've got Netflix. You got another HBO series, and then you've got Amazon Studios. So that's kind of modern. That's a modern approach to the content. I like that.
Yeah. So what else should we talk about? I don't know. You want to talk about TV, movie, or miniseries? One
I
of the
think
most
so,
bizarre
because,
categories ever.
Yeah, well,
this
is
where
is,
True
right.
Detective ended up.
Yes, and it's it,
and
you
Fargo
know, it
ended
be.
Up.
I'm actually fine with it in there, because I think if it, I you know, for lack of, I mean, they're going to end up being anthologies, but they really are miniseries, and so we definitely have to talk about this category, because this is like topics we've had before on TVTM about, you know, short form programming and going in that sort of more British direction. So. And to me, what I loved about this is there's only one movie there, and it was the biggest movie, right? I mean, it's just as far as the star-studded and coming off a Broadway play. So The Normal Heart,
right?
There was just no way it was not going to get nominated, and it was a fine movie. I have nothing against it. But the beauty of it, when you look at these as miniseries, Fargo was, you know, Fargo and True Detective were for me the two big events in 2014 television.
Hmm.
I mean, those were the things people were talking about. They were, you know, they were the it shows of 2014. You can rank them any way you want to, but I think those couldn't be missed. Now, for me, the other one that's on this list, The Missing, which I love, I was a little bit surprised, because I would have probably, you know, I'm happy it's on there. And as I said in my review, I'm happy it's on there at the expense of American Horror Story, which I don't like. And so, I would have put The Honorable Woman from Sundance TV and BBC on there. But hey, it's, you know, if you're going to put The Missing on there, I'll take it. Absolutely. And then Olive Kitteridge from HBO, just seriously fantastic and very dense. And they took an amazing book and turned it into an amazing series. So I got no problems on that one. Zero.
All right. Yeah, I think you're right. This is the year. I mean, True Detective is the show that.
Yeah, and I ended up liking Fargo better, ultimately. But yeah, they're both pretty amazing. No doubt about that.
All right. Do you want to talk anything about the other nominations for TV? The acting, you know, it's like.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny. It's like, I mean, you look at it and you're like, okay, what did they get right there? Sure. I mean, there was by not having the Nick represented in drama, but when you moved, you know, since you moved Fargo and True Detective into miniseries, and then that opened up Clive Owen being able to be nominated for an actor in a TV series drama. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting list. I think it gets pretty much everybody. I mean, obviously you're not getting the Americans, you're not getting John Hamm, unfortunately. I still think Claire Danes is doing great, you know. I have a few issues, but I think when you get into the acting categories, I'm not going to get too upset about it. Mm. You know, again, they were able to put like Louis C.K. from Louis into the comedy one. And Jeffrey Tambor from Transparent, William Macy from Shameless. I don't think Shameless is a comedy, clearly not a comedy, but he's a great actor in it. Did I like Ricky Gervais and Derek? Not really, but I can see why he's nominated. And Don Cheadle should always be nominated for House of Lies. So, you know, those are the ones where I'm a little less concerned about who got in and who got out. I was happy that Maggie Gyllenhaal from The Honorable Woman, even though her series didn't get nominated, that she got nominated. And then there's great things like seeing like, oh, Alison Tolman from Fargo is nominated, as she should be. Frances O'Connor from The Missing, as she should be. You know, they did. I guess you could look back for me. I could say, okay, James Nesbitt from the Missing should have been on there. But that, again, when you get into the actor categories, you're kind of nitpicking a little bit. You know, it was always a slam dunk that Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey and Billy Bob Thornton were going to get nominated. So also, again, hey, great to see Martin Freeman in there. Mark Ruffalo did a great job on The Normal Hearts. Again, when you get in the acting categories, not too many things I get worried about. But I guess there was enough stuff to piss me off, Jason, that I wrote a big column about it.
Yeah, people should go. We'll link to that in the show notes. People should go look at that. Oversight's hard to overlook.
Yes. See, look at that. Mm-hmm. Oversight's hard to overlook because, well, look, I guess if you were to say, how would they have fixed it? Well, I, you know, had they just put Mad Men and the Americans on there, I probably wouldn't have been complaining about anything. Hmm. And that's a rare day indeed.
Yeah, that's true. You don't write negative reviews. What are you talking about?
Right.
It doesn't happen.
Remember when you just blot those Dominion? Out.
No, I don't remember that at all.
I don't even want to know. I went back and reread that. And I was like, wow, that is tragically mean. It's very mean.
Yeah, turns out a mean man wrote that and then put your name on it.
Yep, I don't know. How that happened.
That person, whoever that person
the mean
was.
Fairies, the pixies got in there.
Pixies. They
mean
played
pixies.
Monkey Go to Heaven. They played some, you know.
Oh, look at you with the callback to that.
Yeah,
uh-huh. Okay.
That's a call way, way back.
Yeah.
A little alternative rock for you there. You want to talk about this week is the last week before TV goes dark for a few weeks in terms of they just shut down all the TV channels. No, but like the new shows like on the networks, this is like their moment to be like mid-season finale. We'll see you in a couple, you know, months, suckers. I definitely have seen that get marketed like the mid-season finale is becoming a thing. And I just watched a few mid-season finales this week. Is this stupid? Is it good to have some sort of narrative climax in the middle of your season? What do you think?
This is fraught with peril, this topic. It is definitely a thing. Yeah. I will say, my initial reaction is I'm against it, but look, I'm for it in television in the fall. So you can say I'm for a fall finale because when you're going to bring a show back, for another 10, 11
right,
episodes.
If you're a writer and you realize that at the end of this episode, nobody's going to see the next episode for 2 months, you know, the rules of your other episodes don't really apply because you know everybody who watches your show is going to be left hanging on this. So maybe you should do something to give them, you know, take advantage of that situation in some way. Because otherwise, I mean, if they didn't tell them that they were going to split their season in two, I'd imagine the producers would be kind of sad about it because they lost an opportunity to shape their story a little bit. I don't know.
Well, and that's why I like it in broadcast because it does change the storytelling. I'm not a believer that a 13 episode or even, God forbid, like a 10 episode season should be cut in two. I think that's ridiculous. I don't understand that at all. And it annoys me, like, when The Walking Dead does it. It annoys me when Mad Men does it. You know, AMC's doing it. Look, TNT and everybody's been doing that. They were one of the first ones. TNT were one of the first ones to even try it.
Well, you get to order one season worth of material and call it two seasons, essentially,
yes,
right?
Exactly. And I think that I don't know why it was initially done that way, but later when it was in the hands of AMC with Breaking Bad and Mad Men and The Walking Dead, it's clear that they're putting them into two different Emmy seasons. So you're maximizing your Emmy potential in a 13 episode season.
The less money.
and it changes the money flow a little bit, but I think it's bad for those shows because a 13 episode series like Walking Dead or 14 in the case of the final season of Mad Men, it forces Matt Weiner, right? It just forces those guys to look at that season differently. They have to build in basically a cliffhanger in the middle when organically it's not supposed to be there. You're supposed to have a beginning, middle, and an end, and the middle is where you're moving your chess pieces on the board a lot. You're not creating it like a cliffhanger of any sort. So I hate that. But for like Sleepy Hollow and the ones that all Blacklist and all those Flash, the ones that are having these, 22 to 24 episode seasons, absolutely go ahead and call it a fall finale. I'm fine with that. That works for me. I just don't like to see it later in the year. Like, I don't want anything that's coming in January. I don't want that to have a winter finale or summer or whatever they're going to have. Spring finale, whatever season they decide to stop in. I don't think they should do that. But I'll go for fall finale for broadcast only.
Okay. Just because I have to do this on every episode, I will bring up Doctor Who here only to say that they tried that for a couple of years. They tried to break it in the fall and then do their Christmas special that they always do and then show the rest of them in the spring. And that's a 13 episode season. So, you get six and then you get five or two, well, that's the wrong math. Six and then seven or seven and then six. They ripped us off. They took an episode away when we weren't looking. It's a 14 episode with a thing. So it's like six and then the Christmas special and then another seven. But they stopped this year. They went back to just airing it all in the fall and having the Christmas episode as the capper and then being done. And you know what? I like it better. I like having that momentum. I mean, we talked about having that momentum week to week versus dropping it in a big, binge blob like Netflix and Amazon do. But then there's this other thing, like I could make this argument about a show like Lost too, that narrative momentum, once you lose it, it's really hard to get it back because you have to earn people's the audience has to come back and they have to re-engage and they have to get back up to speed. And I feel like public reaction to Lost would be completely different if they had aired those in, 22 consecutive weeks rather than having it be reruns and then new episodes and then reruns and then new episodes. And I felt that way with Doctor Who. It's the same thing. Even though that's not much of a continuing story, it was still really frustrating to have, well, you get six of them. We'll see you next year, folks. It was just not ideal. So, I think you're right. When you've got 22 episodes to play with, it's a lot easier to take a break and say, look, this is essentially two of these new style short seasons, fall and spring. And that's fine. And so I liked that the Flash didn't end really on a cliffhanger so much as on a few reveals. They sort of addressed some of the questions from the pilot, right? Mm-hmm. I liked that. I thought that was a good way to go. Apparently Arrow, which I am way behind on, had a shocking, stunning cliffhanger to it, which is fine too, because they're coming back for 12 more episodes in the spring, or 10 or 7, because I can't count.
But yeah, your math has been terrible today.
Terrible, very low quality math today.
But yeah, I think you're right. And I think the Brits would probably agree with you that like a straight run and then a Christmas special is how they do it. That's like how it's always been done over there. That's how they want it done.
I watched James Corden was on with Stephen Colbert this week. Uh-huh. That's something we should talk about maybe next week, about because Stephen Colbert is wrapping it up next week.
It's the last week next week for Stephen Colbert. Wow.
And they were talking because obviously Corden is going to follow Colbert on CBS next year.
Yep.
And be on the air before Colbert because David Letterman's not retiring until May. But one of the things that there's just a funny exchange where he said, how many episodes a year did you do in the UK? Because you're going to be on four nights a week now or five nights, whatever he's doing. Math, not my strong point. And he said, right. We do like six. And he said, yeah, that's a nice approach. You do six episodes, air them over a course of like 3 years. It's the British way. It's brilliant. But now he's going to be working every day. Although he had a great answer. He said that when he won the Tony Award for, you know, being on Broadway, that he liked the pace of being on Broadway and basically knowing your whole day is leading up to the show. You do the show, and then there's another show the next day. So you can't really congratulate yourself, and you can't really get mad if you screwed something up. You just got to, you know, forget about it. And that's what I think what doing a late night talk show is. It's the same deal. You just got to, there's another show. I mean, Letterman's going to have done like 30,000 shows by the time he's done. You just got to go to the next show.
Yeah, you gotta like have a short memory. It's like daily journalism, just like that. If you're cranking out a column like every day or every other day.
Yeah, the paper's out. Yep. Time for the next one.
Yeah, you fix it the next day. Yeah. Yep, fix it in post. But exactly. I think that I think he'll be a fine host. He's an interesting guy. He's very funny. It's different. I would have liked to seen, as we talked before, Aisha Taylor in that role because she's a woman and she's a woman of color. So that's two different things that would have been nice to have in late night, which you don't have. But he'll do fine. He's the pick. I didn't pick him, but he's the pick. I think he'll do fine. I think just to put a capper on this whole thing about fall finales, you're doing an injustice to the storytelling. You know, and you're getting away with it, by the way, you're getting away with it on AMC only because you have high demand shows. So for me, it's like, okay, yeah, we're going to wait for Breaking Bad to come back because we love the show. It's like the most, you know, addictive thing. You know, people who've been around with Mad Men, of course, they're going to wait for the last seven that are ever going to air. They're going to sit through there. The Walking Dead, the most popular show on TV. So, yeah, of course, we're going to watch that. When they get a show that kind of sucks and they split it, that's when they're really going to pay the price.
Right.
Because people are going to say, you know what? I don't care. You showed me six of them. Or if it's Jason's math, five.
Yeah, sure.
And,
three and a half.
Three, maybe. And then you're going to come back, how many months later? And something, forget it. They're going to tune out.
Well, they'll throw in a Christmas special, the Mad Men Christmas special.
Right, they'll do the Hell on Wheels Christmas special that no one will give a crap about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, going back to when you talked about Lost, just to wrap that part up, the thing that got me is, do you remember, like, Fox was really, in my recollection, sir, Fox was the network that really took that to heart because they heard the feedback from 24.
Yeah.
And people were like, you know what? Yeah, you can't, you know, too many reruns and too many, we don't want that. And so they started running it in January.
Yeah.
Right? So they like, okay, we're going to stock it all up. We're going to have everything finished, no post-production problems, no whatever, no holidays. Boom. We run it from mid-season straight through.
Yeah. And they did the like two hours each night premiere. And then it still ran through into like the beginning of June because that's a lot of weeks to stuff in, even if you start in January. But that meant they had momentum. And that show is so, it's just entirely serial. You just have to watch it week to week. So get the momentum going. You get people into the story with 4 hours in 2 days. And then, you know, you feed them for the rest of the spring. I think that there's something to that. I mean, I think that's, you see that with something like Sleepy Hollow last year, where they essentially ran, they ordered 13 and they ran them, and then they said, that's it, see you next year. And it, like, and then we don't want to talk about next year because see you next year won't be as good. But I like that idea of like, look, let's order a short series and we'll just run it. And
right.
then that's very English in that same way. That's very British, but I think in a good way. Am I wrong in thinking that the Mad Men thing is really entirely about getting two seasons out of one season? Like literally they just want to extend the life of that show a year. And
so
they just said, we're going to call it two seasons, but it's really just one season order that we've hacked in two in order to, you know, go into the next, like you said, the next awards eligibility period.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean,
completely arbitrary.
Breaking Bad, the final five episodes. Just run the whole thing. You know, you can get away with that when you have the demand,
right?
And
they do.
So they had the goods. I actually am
Breaking
waiting,
Bad the same way.
Yeah, I'm waiting for them to suffer for their decision making because
they'll be punished.
I think it's
one day.
Not good. It's not good for anybody. But you know what? You brought this up, so I'm going to throw it out there. It's kind of like a little twist on you. Did you see it, for starters, because then we can't talk about it if you didn't see it, but did you see the fall finale of Sleepy Hollow?
I didn't.
Okay, well, we won't talk about it.
Okay.
They did address some of our issues.
Oh, that's nice. That gives me some encouragement to go back. I've got like five of them banked on the TiVo because I lost, quite honestly, it's on early in the week, and I was getting to the point where I was going Flash first, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. second.
Oh boy.
And then Sleepy Hollow third. It got downgraded, so I'm way behind on. Yeah, well, you know, it's a bad sign when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is higher on the priority list.
It really is.
Sleepy Hollow. Because last year, I would have not believed you if you told me that that would be true. Because last year, I was very much up on Sleepy Hollow and down on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But
well, I just wanted, for the record, I want to say that I didn't, in our little exchange, say that they fixed it, improved it.
No, they just addressed it.
They addressed something. I'm not saying that they addressed them the correct way.
Is there a character named Good Timman who comes on screen and yells at Surfer Boy, and then he's like, his head is cut off by the Headless Horseman?
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Would be great.
But they Surfer are, Boy, they so are addressing up. Some of our concerns. Right. I'm not sure they're addressing him in the manner that we would like them to.
Oh, interesting.
But
okay,
we
well,
see.
I will. I'll get caught up during the mid-season break.
No, that's the fall. Finale.
Whatever. I will yes. get. I'll get caught up. I'll down.
Because you can't. You know. Because you can't. Those, yeah. You can't iPad. Mess it up. Because mid season, the nebulously titled mid season will start right away in January.
I suppose that's true. With yeah, Agent Carter is a mid season show in the fall finale to spring debut slot of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, this is very confusing. TV is supposed to be easy, Tim. What's happening?
This is the most confusing podcast we've ever recorded.
I think so. Well, it's because we're talking about programming and scheduling, and that's very confusing. How about we get some clarity by taking some questions from listeners?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We'll finish strong.
Big finish.
We're going to start with Alan in the 415.
Ah, there you go.
Who says, some of my best friends are from Marin. Thank you, Alan. We've talked to him before. He said negative things about my fake 415.
Yes.
But he posted on Facebook, and I think this was interesting. He was basically giving it to me. He said, I was surprised you liked Allison Williams' performance in Peter Pan. I thought she utterly failed to capture the bravado, machismo, and imagination unconstrained by the cares of the adult world of a prepubescent boy. She sang pretty when she should have sung cocky. Now, I responded to him on the Facebook page, perhaps a little bit brusquely, saying, ah, you seem to care about the material in Peter Pan, whereas I just didn't care. I mean, literally, like, the story and who the characters were just totally didn't matter to me. And I just listened to her singing and thought, yeah, she acquitted herself just fine. It wasn't embarrassing. But it's true. I suppose if you do a very careful read on what the story is supposed to mean, you could make the argument I did say at some point that I couldn't, you know, help but look at her and think, this is an attractive woman I've seen in other things, maybe not the feelings I should be having for Peter Pan.
Right.
And that is problematic about casting women in that part anyway. I mean, I get why you don't cast a 12-year-old boy in the part, because most 12-year-old boys aren't very good actors. But at the same time, yeah. So I don't know.
No, you make a good point. And by the way, since you brought it back up with this viewer question, I guess the viewer or listener brought it up.
Alan in the 415, yeah.
Yes. I'm chuckling and I can't even get through it. We had a little discussion last week about Allison Williams and her attractiveness quotient.
Yes.
And the fact that you find her very attractive.
I do
as well, but I do kind of find her periodically in that short hair a little bit mannish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure you saw this. I thought about you. because it proved my point astonishingly well. So well, in fact, that it may have ruined Allison Williams for me, even if she grows her hair out again. But somebody put up on Twitter a picture, and it said, who wore the part better? And she parted her hair. She parted her hair as Peter exactly how Brian Williams parted his hair.
I figure she used his hair guy.
Yeah, they looked like they were like identical twins in that picture.
Yeah,
and oh boy,
I don't need to be reminded of Brian Williams.
Yeah, it took a little wind out of the flag, I'm sure.
No, she needs the long hair.
Yeah, that was ruined to me.
She needs the long hair.
Mm-hmm.
In our little chat window, I just pasted a picture, a link for you to go see. That's like it'll bring you back to Allison Williams.
All right, I'm gonna
with the long hair.
Oh, see, yeah, that's better.
See,
thank
long
you.
Hair.
That
anyway,
is.
Alan, thanks so much for prompting middle-aged men to talk about Allison Williams. Megan from the 701.
Oh, the 701.
701. It's a classic.
Okay, and do we know where that is from?
She's helpfully told us it's the entire state of North Dakota.
Oh, 701 in North Dakota. Okay.
Yeah, the
all
701.
Right. This is impressive.
So, great question here. Has there ever been a single moment or episode that made you stop watching a show you previously really enjoyed? And she says she's got a few examples.
Okay.
Just the first X-Files movie disappointed her so much she just stopped watching the show after that point.
Wow.
She'd been a huge fan, and she was like, forget it. And she says that there was a reveal on Bones as well that was so dumb, where a character was sort of had a twist that was so like such a betrayal mm-hmm. that she wasn't gonna watch it anymore. You have any similar moments where there was a moment where you're like, oh no, show, that's not, don't do that.
Interesting. Well, I, you know, there are a number of, I'm not sure if it's one episode, because I actually not sure that would be cause as a professional critic to bail, just because you'd have to give more of a chance than that.
Right, right. You have to soldier on a little bit more than a fan does.
Yeah, I'm being held to a higher ideal.
I can remember a few moments where I've like yelled at the TV that, you know, you come on, show. So basically,
you said,
like,
oh,
F
no,
you,
you
show. Mm-hmm. Although I remember the moment that I dropped out on Aaron Sorkin's Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Yes, that's also a show I gave up.
That was like
your moment.
Two or three episodes in, there was this whole extended bit about Jeff Tahoe and his writing partner and how they were these hacks and that they wanted to do this thing. And I'm sitting there watching this thinking, I'm not even a TV insider, and I realize that Jeff Tahoe, or Ron Tahoe or whatever, it's Jeff Reno and Ron Osborne who worked with him on The West Wing. These mm-hmm. are TV writers. And I'm like, as I'm sitting there watching, I'm realizing, oh my God, I can tell that this is Aaron Sorkin not very cleverly just grinding axes with mm-hmm. everybody he ever worked with who he didn't like. And I thought, I can't watch this show anymore. If this is gonna, if it's just one man's demons, and it's also not funny because the pilot like was really well done and the show isn't. But I had that moment where I was like, I can't watch a show like this. I can't watch a show where it's just transparently some sad man yelling, using his power as a TV writer to yell at his former colleagues. That's just, so I gave up. And that
yes,
was the end.
Aaron Sorkin grinding axes. That's a stunner, isn't it?
I mean, what?
As we've learned now. I mean, he just was up to that even like he was up to that like a week ago.
I heard from people on the penultimate episode of The Newsroom where people were really furious about, first off, that there was some kind of questionable statements made about rape, and mm-hmm. then in general his complete I mean, he has women issues in general.
He really does.
And he has criticism on the internet issues. And you put those together to women criticizing his work on the internet, and he doesn't forget. And he will attack them in his work. This is a thing he does.
Yeah, it's all kinds of ugly. It was, that part was, you know, that, and I had tried to get back into The Newsroom, and I just couldn't. And I just was like, ugh. Throwing up in my own mouth while I was watching it. And you know what? It's time for him to go. Oh. Just go make a movie. He does so much better doing a movie, because it doesn't allow him just the format of, you know, television, endless episodes of television you can make. It doesn't, a movie era play does not allow him to sort of pontificate, which is his real big problem.
You know, the other show that I remember now that where I basically said, that's it, I can't watch this show anymore, was ER, which lasted for a million years, you know, ER.
Helicopter episode?
No, you know, the one that got me was there's that episode where Kelly Martin is like murdered in the hospital and found by Noah Wiley. And I forget, I can never remember why she was murdered. I always refer to it when I tell this story. I say she was eaten by bears, like bears came into the hospital and attacked her and ate her. And I just was like, why am I watching? This show is so stupid. And there's nothing left for them to do. It's only on because it's so profitable. And I remember that was my moment. But there's so many jumping off points you could have for ER. But that was the one for me where I was like, forget it. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, my ER moment, I think, was the second busload of children turning over. That one was, and then I was like, okay, yeah, no, done on that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's definitely been news. I will say this to the, is it 701? So we're talking about that, the area code, 701?
The 701.
Yeah, I would say this. There's been plenty of news shows, like series and stuff that I'm reviewing, where I've opted out. I can't even get through the episode. And you know, those are shows that went on to die. Sometimes die within the first two or three episodes, and I never got to see them again. But as far as an existing shows, I think that I definitely bailed out of Sons of Anarchy when I realized that it was the operatic nature of it was so ridiculous, and that there was no one left. who I cared whether they lived or died. That's a bad sign. And then I definitely bailed on 24 when it became too redonkulous for plausibility effects. There's ones where those are definitely series where I was like, you know what, can't do it anymore. And Dexter's the same thing. So those are my big three probably of giving up.
Yeah, in 24 for me it was there was the one season where they actually detonated the nuclear bomb and there was Shora Eggdashlu from the House of Sand and Fog was in it, and she was supposed to be like some it was supposed to be like, oh no, we're more progressive this year. Not every character from the Middle East is going to be a villain. And I was like, oh well, she's a good actress. We'll see. And they did the ridiculous bomb thing, and then I believe she immediately becomes embroiled in terrorism issues. And I'm like, oh please. Yeah. And that was my end for 24. That's absolutely.
There were so many things for 24, but I think it was. Having the second mole, which would go on to be like nine moles.
So many moles
with 24. That and the fact that the president being in on it and all this stuff, and then the nuclear bomb. Like that show. I mean, seriously, that show was batshit crazy. It really was.
Oh yeah, yeah, and that whatever you got what you pay for there. So
yeah,
but yeah, I totally get that, and I know that there are fans who. So I think I would argue that usually the show is not working for you in some ways, but you're still watching it kind of out of inertia, kind of out of hope that it'll change. And then there's like one cut that's just a little too deep, and that's the one that drives you away, and you're like, I can't do this anymore. I've heard that for a lot of the Joss Whedon shows, where people, he kills off some beloved character, because that happens all the time in those shows, and they just can't take anymore. But I would argue that I think there's almost always an underlying condition there where you're already kind of dissatisfied, and then you see something and you're like, oh no, forget it. No, just that's the last straw. I can't.
There's a tipping point, as Malcolm Gladwell would say.
Oh yeah. Good knowledge there. Solid. All right. Dean in the 707.
Oh, I know where the 707 is. Wow, rained on pretty hard in the 707 this week.
Yeah, well, yeah, in all of the California areas, but certainly I think
wine
it's raining.
Country. Ooh.
Yeah, they're flooded up there.
Mm-hmm.
May still be. He said, in the spirit of the reason for the season, a trinity of questions. TV has a lot of cops, lawyers, and doctors, but very few pastors. Who are your favorite members of the clergy from TV? And speaking of Joss Whedon, he has a shout out for Shepherd Book, which is Ron Glass from Firefly. Mm-hmm. Is there any place of worship on TV you'd like to visit? And what TV series has best dealt with themes of religion and spirituality? Any thoughts on that one?
Wow. I didn't see that coming.
No, I didn't. I saw this one. I was like, I should probably send this to Tim. And then it was too late. And so
Because that was, because you don't want to go to the seventh heaven hot button.
No.
Bad things happen with that.
Or Helltown. Do you remember Helltown, Robert Blake? Nothing Sacred, right? That was the one that was so controversial.
Yeah, Nothing Sacred was that was a
that was a show that happened.
I'm trying to think now. This is good because Matters of Faith, characters in the Matters of Faith. That's a tough. Yeah, because I don't, when it gets a little too preachy.
Well, yeah, that's why I mean,
can't deal with that.
He mentions like the church that doubled as a synagogue in Stars Hollow. I feel like the shows that really do coverage of religion right are oftentimes, they're set in a town and the church is part of the community, and the reverend, the pastor, they're part of that community, and that is how they're portrayed. And I think that's a lot of times when it's most effective. I think it's also the safest thing for TV to do, because TV is in many ways afraid of having a show that's like, this is a show about spiritual issues. It's a harder sell to get a show like that on the air. So you end up putting it in the context of your show. I hate to say it, but there's always, you always have all these supernatural shows too, where sometimes I feel like those issues in general genre TV, but especially the ones where there's like demons and things, you end up having some interesting conversations about spiritual issues in those shows, because those shows are like, their premise is that there's something else, there are other powers,
right?
And you end up with like good and bad kind of thing. Like Supernatural, for example, is a show that's got angels and demons and things in it, and the I don't know.
Yeah, I think the shows that are built that are outright, the Roma Downey ones, the ones that are built for all about religion, I never watch those. A, they're not very good, and I never watch them. I don't really want somebody else's religion in my face. I do like the idea of, you know, spirituality. I do like the idea of priests having conflict. Like, I think that so I don't think that a show built, I mean, I could be missing something really obvious here, but I don't think shows completely built around them are the answer. I will say that I did like how the priest was used in Broadchurch.
Oh yeah, that's a great example.
I think a show from way back that did a really good job of how religion affects things was I'm gonna blow this. Hold on now. It's the HBO series about prison from ages ago.
Oz.
Oz. I think Oz, they definitely used religion there very strongly, because these guys were all going to die, right? And then there was corruption and whatnot. There was stuff. So that was pretty interesting. And I think people forget about this. This is kind of – I like the humorous aspect. And there was dramatic aspect too, but I like the humorous and dramatic aspects of how the Sopranos used. Remember Father, what's his name, used to come over and eat all the food that Carmela would make, and she had an attraction to him, and he spent the night over there one night, and they were, you know, they were just Father Phil. Is it Father Phil?
I don't know. You got that Catholic, right, the Catholic angle, which is sort of a natural whenever you've got a mob story, right? Because that's your classic Italian mobsters, they're all Catholics, but they're also all criminals. And how do those things interact, right? How do you get the seek forgiveness and all of that?
Well, it was really good. I mean, and they use him to great effect, because there's the one season where he's able to tell Carmela, like, look, you can't like come in here and like, you know, have your sins washed away. You have to acknowledge the fact that you were actually part of this criminal procedure. And that was a turning point in the Sopranos that they used to sort of like wake Carmela up to like stop. I mean, she was clearly in denial about her role and how complicit she was in this legal stuff that Tony was doing. She was living on it, but not acknowledging it. But they also used it to humor, where we you know, it was, I believe it was Father Phil. He would come over and he was starting to use the mobster wives for like getting all his baked ziti and stuff. He was using it for like, and they were having crushes on him, and he was eating all their stuff. It was great. And then there was definitely something, you know, he almost crossed the line with Carmela, but didn't. So that those are the ones I kind of remember, right? Those priests. But as far as like,
I got one now. When I was talking about Community and shows set in a town, I finally got it. So I'll throw this out there. Early David Kelly, before you could really make fun of him. I think in some ways, maybe most successful creatively, David Kelly, Picket Fences had recurring priests. And they talked about religious issues in the context of the kind of moral. That was a show with a lot of, I mean, because it's a David Kelly show, but set in the small town in Wisconsin, a really interesting set of issues. And they definitely talked about religious issues a lot. So I'll throw that one out there. That was a really interesting show.
That's a good pick. Yeah, that's a good pick. And I will, on top of that, I will pile in the priest in The Returned.
Oh yeah, well, see, that's exactly what I was saying, is that I think you end up in these genre shows with dealing with these issues, and it's almost a little safer, because, you know, in the, well, we could go to The Leftovers and say, you know, The Leftovers, there's the whole kind of cult, but you know, angle, and then there's like Christopher Eccleston as the priest.
So great.
And that is a show. I mean, and Lost is about spiritual issues too, but Damon Lindelof with The Leftovers, really, that's what it's about. And that's really good too. But you get the chance to talk about these issues. It's like a little bit safer in a way, because you put it in this context. If you're doing a story set after the rapture,
right,
then it's not, you know, it's, of course, it's part of the premise of the show. And I think that drops some of the resistance that people might otherwise have to being like, is this show going to push, you know, its religious view? Instead, it's just sort of like, no, this is a, you can view this as the way the world works. You can, it's safer when it's like, no, this is the future, or this is a different world from ours where the rapture happened. And you don't, it lowers the barriers a little bit and lets them tell stories that are still about these subjects, just without, you know, the resistance that you might get if it's the, you know, Touched by an Angel, so, or Highway to Heaven, right?
That's true. Yes.
Great Michael Landon hair.
I totally agree.
Michael Landon's hair, very excellent in Highway to Heaven. But
don't go there.
Victor French wore the A's hat. So like A's fans, Highway to Heaven, check it out.
Okay.
Kate from the 925, now in the 202.
Ooh, okay. That's the East Bay of the Bay Area, and then going into
DC?
Is that Washington?
That's yeah, DC. Uh-huh,
it's
yeah.
DC. Yeah.
Can you rate? Can you rank late night shows? Maybe we should hold on and have this be a topic yeah. next week, with it being the last week of Colbert.
Oh, great timing! That's,
all right,
let's
Kate.
Do that. Absolutely.
Kate, we're gonna bookmark. We're gonna put a bookmark in Kate's question. That'll be a topic.
We're gonna put a pin
week.
In that, Kate.
Yep.
We're gonna pin that's that right. down for that's, next week. That's a great one.
Question's
though.
So good, we're not gonna answer it, but instead make it a topic. So, the good news and the bad news there. Anything else yes. we should talk about this week? Feel like we've destroyed the Golden Globes. I mean, fixed the Golden Globes, and
we fixed them. They're done. They're fixed. We did talk about just shows, and I mean, as far as award shows in general. And then we did hint that we will come back at some point, and we will have a very extended take on my end of the year best of series for 2014. Because if you were on Twitter today, yeah. you saw me saying I do not subscribe to the top 10 list. Mine. You know, I will not be pinned down by some mm-hmm. archaic modality. And I'm going to have, like, I got to tell you, a lot. Like, I've got about 30 top shows combined, comedy and drama. And then I have wow. a separate 15 for that are just network shows. Because network's playing in a different rule. They're, I mean, literally of my 30, if I settle on that figure, only two of them are actual broadcast network shows.
Wow.
Yeah. So... And probably not the ones you would expect. So I did a separate take on broadcast only, because they are playing by different rules. And we'll have so much material to talk about when that happens.
Wait, that'll be in our mid-season finale.
Yes, it will be.
Because we've our done winter finale.
We've done 13 episodes.
We've done 13.
Or in
yeah,
your
we,
math, we've done five.
We've done 13. So there's only eight more to go by my math to reach 30. Yeah, but we'll do that before Christmas, and then we'll skip a week, I think.
We're gonna have a holiday break,
or we'll do one of those sneaky things like at Thanksgiving where we record something in advance. But definitely we will leave you on a cliffhanger in our midseason finale, because it's all the rage now.
You know, I have a lot of knowledge about Christmas movies.
Oh, do you?
I do. That could come out. And Christmas music could be a whole Christmas theme
interesting.
Thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, but then we would block out our Jewish friends. They would be not interested. Mm-hmm.
That's true. Well,
they could
say,
okay.
They could just ignore that like they ignore so much else this time
yeah,
of year.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And we'll have a dreidel song in there.
Sure. That's always the thing that killed me on TV when I was a kid, was the and I'm not Jewish, although my wife is, so and she laughs about it too. It was always the, and for our Jewish friends, this happy Hanukkah. It was like everything is wall-to-wall Christmas, and then at the very end there's like ding, and for our Jewish friends, happy Hanukkah. It's like, yeah, thanks a lot, yeah, Santa.
That fixes everything.
Yeah, great job. Yeah, it's all
great
fine.
Good job,
now.
Santa.
It's all good now, Santa. Oh, Merry Christmas, everybody. Anyway, so we'll be back next week. You can find me at Jay Snell on Twitter. You can find Tim at Bastard Machine. You can tweet at us at the TVTM account, which is run by a robot that we don't control, but we pay attention to what is tweeted to TVTM. You can post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. You can email us at podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. And I think that's about it, Tim. Until next week, when we will talk about late night, we'll say goodbye to Stephen Colbert temporarily, and we'll start talking about best and worst of the year.
Sounds great.
All right. We'll see you all next week. Thanks for listening.